Welcome back to the MJA podcast. I'm your host, Kate Swanell. Can you remember where you were in 1999? Can you remember what technology you were using, or what drugs you were prescribing or even being prescribed? 20 years ago, healthcare and medicine in Australia were very different from what they are today, but our national medicines policy is still partying like it's 1999. My guests today are Associate Professor Orin Chisholm, Program Director of Pharmaceutical Medicine at the University of New South Wales, and Dr. Brendan Shaw, Principal of Shoreview Consulting. They've written an article for the MJA detailing why the National Medicines Policy should be reviewed and what contemporary issues need to be addressed in any new framework that is developed in its place. I'm delighted to have them both as my guests today. Perhaps somebody could please tell me what it is, how long it's been in place, and what it's designed to do.
Australia has a National Medicines Policy. Many people actually don't know that, including some politicians, I have to say. But Australia does have a National Medicines Policy, and it's had one for almost 20 years. We're actually coming up to the 20th anniversary of the development of the National Medicines Policy. It really is just an overview framework of how medicines policy operates in Australia, and it has four key pillars that cover things like making sure Australians have access to medicines at an affordable cost, making sure that medicines meet certain standards of quality, making sure that medicines are used appropriately, and also making sure that the medicines industry is responsible and viable and help those medicines get to the community. Probably the issue is that it's almost 20 years old and has not been reviewed since it was developed in the end of the 20th century.
Who developed it?
Look, it was developed principally, it was a government policy, but it was developed in collaboration with a range of stakeholders, including health experts, government officials, senior members of the PBAC at the time, industry was involved, patient groups, and it was a collaborative exercise across a whole range of stakeholders to come up with a national policy to say how Australia should run its medicines policy.
Is one of the reasons, and perhaps, Orin, you can answer this one, is one of the reasons it hasn't been updated because it's been so successful?
I think the policy has overall been very successful, but I think it's time to actually have a look at it and see if it's fit for purpose for, say, the next 20 years, the way medicine is evolving over the coming period of time. There have been a lot of changes in the way medicine is progressing, a lot of technological developments that have happened since the policy was put in place. There's much more of a move to co-production of healthcare as a model of healthcare in Australia, more patient-centred healthcare, and those different emphases compared with when the policy was first put in place, we could really take those into account in reviewing the policy and seeing if we need to make any adjustments to it going forward into the future.
Let's have a closer look at some of the things that might have changed. In your paper, you mentioned that, for example, the drugs Australians use has changed radically in 20 years, hasn't it?
Definitely. So back in 1999, when the policy came in, we had a lot of small molecule products. There was a lot of the big sellers were the statin products for cholesterol. So big advances back then, and products that affected large numbers of patients. Today, we're seeing a lot more personalised and rare diseases as the focus, and oncology as the focus for medicines development. They're also correspondingly more complex medicines to develop, so a lot more biological-based medicines, monoclonal antibodies. They're very complex to manufacture. The supply chain is much more complex than the tablets that were the major pillar of medicines development in the late 20th century. So we're seeing a lot of progress and more complexity in the process.
Do those changes make medicines more expensive now and harder to access for people?
I think what's happening is that a lot of the new medicines that are coming through are changing the game, if you like, of access to medicines. There's a lot of new therapies coming through that offer a lot of opportunities for curing diseases and treating diseases that we haven't been able to before. But I think also they're raising a whole range of issues around things like genetics, the economics around a drug. So when you have patient populations that are much smaller than 20 years ago, when many more of the drugs were large population-based drugs, now a lot more of the drugs are targeted to specific genes and to specific diseases and specific patient groups. that changes a whole range of things about how the medicine is used and how it's used in the health system and how it impacts on policy. And so I think one of the things that we're suggesting in the article is that given things have changed so much in 20 years, it's probably time now to go back and have a look and see if the policies fit for purpose for the future.
Have the bodies, the national bodies that put the NMP together, have they changed? Has there been any change in who's running what now?
Well, I think there's certainly been lots of changes in terms of the bureaucracy, the different departments, the agencies that are involved, that's evolved over time, and also a lot of the consulting and advisory bodies that operate in the medicines policy space. Certainly they've evolved and changed, some have come and gone, and so I think part of that debate and part of the work that needs to happen is to look at, again, whether those bodies are doing the job or whether there's bodies that need to be created or other ones that aren't there that need to be created for the future to ensure that everyone's got their views represented.
I'm chatting today with Orin Chisholm and Brendan Shaw from UNSW about the National Medicines Policy. If you've got any suggestions for who you'd like to see as a guest on the MJA podcast, you can drop me a line at cswanell@mja.com.au. That's cswanell, all one word, C, S for Sam, W-A-N-N-E-L-L, at mja.com.au. Oren and Brendan's perspective can be found at mja.com.au, where you'll also find the rest of our podcasts. Back to our chat. Have patients changed much?
Patients are a lot more educated and more informed about their healthcare, their own health, and they want more input into their healthcare decisions. So they want to work more with the physicians in coming to a decision about how to approach their healthcare needs.
How has the internet changed things? I mean, I know when you say patients are more educated, are they also more misinformed?
Well, it goes both ways.
Yeah.
There's a lot of health misinformation on the internet that patients can access,
yes,
and that can influence their thinking. So I think, you know, there really needs to be a lot more correct information going out there from academia, from healthcare systems, from government, to correct some of the misinterpretations that are out there in the internet, definitely.
I think that's one of the things that's an example of the sort of things that have changed over the last two decades, is that, you know, 20 years ago, people didn't go on the internet largely to look for all the sort of information that wasn't on the internet, whereas nowadays, many people, you know, when they sort of get sick or get an illness, one of the first things they do is go on Google and try and find out what the disease is about, read Wikipedia, all that sort of stuff, and that's what patients are doing. So, and I think part of making sure that policy frameworks are relevant is to make sure that we take into account those factors and those changing community behaviours.
Let's just say, for some reason, everybody goes, we don't need a new national medicines policy, let's not bother. What are the consequences of that?
I think one of the things that can happen is you'll get policy drift. Things will start to be done without a framework, and the risk is that there'll be all these little incremental decisions as all these major changes are happening in healthcare, and there's going to be no broad, comprehensive, strategic discussion about what that means for Australians and the Australian policy system. Rather than an exercise in incrementalism, I think it would be really great to have a broader conversation about what does that mean for Australia, what does it mean for the Australian government, what does it mean for the Australian industry, what does it mean for Australian patients and the community.
On top of that, I wonder whether we should broaden it to beyond just medicines, and maybe the title of the policy now is not really fit for the future of medicines, because we're seeing a major increase in medicine and devices working together with digitally enhanced medicines, with a massive increase in cell and gene therapy products. That we're just on the verge of these products. There's a wave onslaught of these products coming through the development process. So maybe medicines is not an appropriate title anymore. Maybe we need to think of something a bit broader that, as Brendan said, will give us an overarching framework under which all of the decisions about the future of healthcare can be brought together and keep it cohesive as we move into the future.
You've listed nine things that didn't exist in 1999 that should probably be part of a national policy. It's funny, when you read that list, you go, oh yeah, and then you realise they really did not exist in 1999. Antimicrobial resistance, I mean, there's an area that's just dramatically changed, hasn't it, in 20 years?
There's a range of things that have, you know, the world's changed, I think.
Yeah, that's and, the bottom line, yeah.
Particularly in medicine and healthcare, you know, a lot of social changes, a lot of technology changes, which is great. Like, it's great for the community and great for everyone, but I think policy needs to keep up with that, and the policy frameworks, I think, need to keep up with that.
So what's the next step, do you think? Obviously, a review is needed. How does that come about?
The government has already suggested that they are intending to undertake a review of the National Medicines Policy, I think, within the next several months. So that is one thing, and that has been driven by industry and other players in this field asking for reconsideration of the policy and whether it is still fit for purpose.
My sense is that they're still in the early days of figuring out how the review should be done, but I think it's a real opportunity. We do this once every 20 years. I think it's a really good opportunity to have a broader discussion with a range of stakeholders to assess where things are going in the future.
Could you have predicted in 1999 some of the things that are going on now?
Yeah, and in fact, that might be one of the questions: is, you know, how do you future-proof healthcare? How do you future-proof policy to at least make it more adaptable to the inevitable social and economic and technological changes that are likely to happen in healthcare in the future? You know, you look at some of the technologies and therapies that are in the pipeline, and some of the predictions about where healthcare is going in 20 or 30 years. There's some amazing opportunities there, but also some important issues.
Thank you both for your time.
Thanks very much.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.